Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Carlos Colazo, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast Deep Dives, and today we are focused on the Atlanta Braves, an organization coming off of really the first down season in many a year. Really, I would say since the Ronald Acuna, Ozzy Albies, Austin Riley, we could keep going down the list, group all arrived and kind of sparked a resurgence really almost a decade ago now. But so now we're going to look at kind of, okay, was last year a little blip or was it more than that? And kind of what does this farm system look like now and its ability to kind of help bring the Braves back into playoff contention? Carlos, great to see you. You've done the Braves list. I've done the Braves list in the past. You've done the Braves list now for quite a while. What does it feel like when you were working on this one? Did it feel pretty similar or did this one feel like there's a little bit of a change going on?
I would say it felt mostly pretty similar. It feels like for a few years now, this has been a very pitcher heavy organization, and that remains the case. And I also feel like this has been a bottom third farm system in the game for a few years now, and that also remains the case. I mean, maybe the most notable change this year is that there are actually a few more interesting hitters to write about near the top of their list because they were aggressive in tackling hitters at the top of the draft. And they also have some early returns from the international market, both of which are kind of new items for the Braves, at least in recent memory for their farm system. So I'd say the overwhelming thing is more of the same, pitching heavy. But if you are kind of like a Braves fan and waiting to see more hitting prospects just at the top of the system, there are a few additions that have come from the draft, the international market this year.
So with that, we're just going to dive straight in. Cam Caminiti, as you see on the crawl, if you're watching on the YouTube channel, is our number one prospect in the Braves organization. This one feels like, okay, so we have Cam Caminiti and J.R. Richie, both of whom made our top 100. Mm-hmm. Was this a clear like one and then two, or was there at least some discussion of how do you line these pitchers up?
I think it was fairly straightforward. I think there is a case for J.R. Richie, but that case mostly lies on proximity and safety. If you wanted to just say, well, what is the safest bet to be a big leaguer in the near future? If you're really weighing the proximity factor heavily, I think you could make a case for J.R. Richie. As you said, they're both in our top 100. We have similar or the exact same adjusted scores on both, but I just think the upside that Cam Caminiti offers made him the candidate, and it wasn't too terribly hard to get to that conclusion. I just think there is more to dream on with Cam. It's more likely that he winds up being a starter in the top of a rotation compared to Richie, who I think is a pretty safe bet to be a number four or five in some capacity. With J.R. Richie, I think there's just a little less on the fastball. Maybe there's a little less on the slider this year, and he has flashed a good slider in the past to make me feel comfortable that he's not going to be anything more than a four or five. So two good prospects at the top, but ultimately Cam's upside made him the fairly easy pick. Like, I don't think anyone on our staff preferred J.R. Richie over Cam Caminiti, and that's mostly the sort of feedback that I was getting from the Braves and from other scouts that I was talking to when kind of vetting this list.
So looking at Caminiti last year, you know, we obviously he got 13 starts at low A Augusta, mm-hmm. 70 innings overall. If you throw in what he did the Florida Complex League, which don't look at the Florida Complex League stats very long if you have a weak stomach. What do we know, Matt, now about him? You know, very solid season. Again, I made that joke about the Florida Complex League. Overall, very solid season, 70 innings, looked impressive. But what do we know now that would be like, okay, we know now this about Cam Caminiti that we didn't know coming into the 25 season?
Yeah, I just have more confidence in the pure pitching ability. And I think he's also shown enough flashes with both of his secondaries, a changeup and a slider, to feel comfortable that he's going to have more than just the fastball to get hitters out. When he was coming out of the draft, he had one of the more exciting fastballs in his draft class in 2024. It was a pitch that got multiple 70 grade future projections. I still think it has traits to be that caliber of a pitch. He was more changeup oriented, or at least we preferred the changeup to his slider. And his questions were like, okay, what is the breaking ball going to be like for Cam? Is he going to be able to develop a reliable one? I think in his pro debut, just seeing the quality of the strikes with the fastball and the quality of the strikes overall over a full season was encouraging. And also just the effectiveness of both his secondaries. Now, I do think both his slider and his changeup are pitches that he's going to need to continue improving and continue flashing and see how effective those pitches are against upper level hitters, because you can critique those a little bit. I don't think either of those pitches are no doubt pluses right now. We've got above average grades on both, but he's experimented with a new kick change. It's got splitter like depth at his best. He has added some more sweep to his slider that looks like a nightmare pitch against lefties. So if both of those pitches are going to be reliable for him, he's got a really effective way to attack both lefties and righties in the strikes to work deep into games. So it's a fairly complete pitcher arsenal from that perspective. And I think just in general, it's always really encouraging to see a young pitcher go out, log innings, throw strikes. Because again, this is a guy who's sitting in the mid 90s and getting up to 97 from the left side with his fastball. So it's a really healthy combination of strike stuff, polished secondaries for Cam at this stage.
That's where you kind of, this could get exciting. Now, he is far away. We are talking about a guy who will start the season in high A, has yet to throw a pitch above low A so far. Mm-hmm. But what you just laid out, if the development path continues, if he continues to get stronger, continues to throw strikes, continues to develop secondaries, all these if. But if all those things come together, he does kind of have a little bit of a higher ceiling, I feel like, than we've been talking about a lot of pitchers for the Braves. The Braves have had a number of top 100 pitchers. We've had AJ mm-hmm. Smith Shaver, you know, not that long ago in the top 100. We had Hurston Waldrop in the top 100. We've had, you know, again, the Braves generally have had kind of guys kind of hovering at the back of the 100. It does feel like Caminiti, a lot of these guys we've been talking about them, they've been kind of more of that, this could be your solid mid rotation to back of the rotation starter. And again, mm-hmm. we put those guys in the 100 because there's value to that. The Bryce Elders of the world, like this is more Spencer Strider. We did not have in the 100 at the start of the year, then we moved him in just before he graduated. He's yeah. obviously a different cat than all of these, you know, but Caminiti kind of the more traditional path. It feels like there's a little bit more upside here than we've seen in this kind of recent group of Brave starters who've kind of moved through the system.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it does feel like just with the volume of pitchers they've selected for in the draft, they've had this sort of steady pipeline of arms that are going to help the big league team in some capacity, whether that's a reliever, whether that's a spot starter. They've had a number of these pitchability types who have been pitching in the upper minors and are getting a chance to impact the big league team. But I think Caminiti, like you said, he checks a lot of the boxes you're looking for in a young pitcher. I mean, maybe you would just rather have a no doubt banger breaking ball, but some of the highest people on Cam Caminiti brought up the name of Chris Sale with him. I mean, it's not a direct comp, obviously. I think that's a dangerous comp for any sort of young pitcher, but the fact that it's this organization, the fact that he's a low slot lefty, the fact that he has elite traits to his fastball with good extension and the slider, again, it showed flashes of being this devastating sweeperish slider. So like there are some traits that they share that I think you could point to. We have him now graded out as like a number three starter. And I think what he does in 2026 will go a long way in telling us, okay, is he more of this like number three pushing number two, maybe even like talking about him in the same lens as the guys like Thomas White, maybe another really talented high school left-handed pitcher who just went out and showed it. I think you're going to want to see more development of the secondaries before you go that far. But yeah, I think my question is like, what does Cam Caminiti not do right now that you're skeptical about? I think really it's pitch at the higher levels of the minors, and that's just something that's going to come with time.
Stay durable. I mean, it's a lot of things that you can't even check off at this point. Yeah, when you're in low A, you don't have these things. You can't say you have these.
Right.
Richie, as you said, J.R. Richie's kind of they're both in the top 100. They're very different. Like with J.R. Richie, if you say, well, tell me about his pitches, we could be here for, you know, we could make that a whole podcast of its own if we wanted to. Like, there's seven pitches at different times, right? Like, this is a guy who has shown the ability to mix and match, to, you know, he can manipulate a baseball, and that's going to be kind of key for him going forward, isn't it?
It is going to be key, and he's one of these pitchers who has a unique capacity to move the baseball around and to pick up pitch shapes seemingly overnight. When he was coming out of the draft, he was primarily a fastball, slider, changeup pitcher. It was three pitches that people viewed as really good. He was viewed as an advanced athletic high school pitcher who a lot of people thought were going to move quickly. He dealt with the Tommy John surgery and actually kind of recovered remarkably quickly from that. And his polish and touch and feel came back pretty quickly as well, which I think just speaks to his innate pure pitching ability and athleticism. But now he's a guy who's throwing multiple fastball shapes. He's got a four seam fastball. He's got a two seam fastball that both get up to 96, 97. He throws a changeup. He throws a curveball. He throws a gyro slider. He's thrown a sweeper before. He's thrown a cutter. So I really do feel like if you're looking at recent Braves pitching prospects, there are some Spencer Schwellenbach shades here. Just a pitcher who's going to command the ball and show you a very diverse arsenal of pitches that are going to keep you off balance. The one thing holding Richie back, maybe multiple things holding Richie back, is like, can you look at any of those pitches right now and say it's a plus offering? I'm not sure that you can. A year ago, 2 years ago, we would have said maybe his slider is going to be that pitch. I know there was a time when we were talking about that breaking ball is one of the better sliders in this Braves system. I think the fastball in general is a little bit lighter than you would like to see if you're hoping to project a top of the rotation sort of arm. So if he can address those areas, either add a little bit more power to the fastball to miss more bats with that, or show a true like wipe out breaking ball, I think that could help elevate the ceiling we're talking about here with Richie. But I feel like this is a pitcher who should be getting opportunities with the big league club this year. And I would expect him to hold up pretty well.
So when you look at this farm system, as you said, it's been very pitcher heavy. And by the way, it's been excellent producing pitcher. You just mentioned it's Spencer Strider. It's Spencer Schwellenbach. It's, it's been guys like Bryce Elder as well. AJ Smith-Shawver. There's been, when it comes to arms, this organization has consistently kept producing pitchers, not just, starters and guys go in the pen as well. And then last year we saw farm system wise, when the big league position players, when they hit injuries, when they hit ineffectiveness, there just really wasn't a lot ready to step in. Mm-hmm. When you look at it now, we ask this question, is the system better or worse than it was last year? I want to frame this slightly differently for the Braves. If that happens again this year, we've already seen it happen to some extent, which is Hyesung Kim was supposed to be the shortstop. He is still supposed to be the shortstop, but we don't know when he'll be there ready to go in May, June, July. It's something where we know that it's going to be a delayed start of the season for him because of an offseason injury where he slipped and fell. With that, is this farm system have the position player prospect depth to kind of fill in, even if it's not starters, or is that still kind of a question?
Yeah, that's the huge question here for the Braves. And I think we talk about pitching a lot with the Braves. They have actually done a sneaky good job of developing hitters, guys like Drake Baldwin and Michael Harris, who were not first round picks. They've developed into really productive big leaguers. I mean, Drake Baldwin was just the rookie of the year a year ago. We had him on our top 100. Mm-hmm. He was ranked inside the top five. So they have had some names at the top of the list in recent years. The top hitting prospect for them right now is Alex Lodis, who's just drafted out of college. And I wouldn't expect him to be the sort of college profile who's going to have a Nick Kurtz-like ascension to the majors. His hitting ability is just not as refined as that at this point. And so I do think that's kind of the hole you see in the system right now. They have had kind of a need at shortstop for a while now. If baseball is a sport like the NFL or the NBA, they would have just targeted that need by drafting three shortstops consecutively in the 2025 draft. All those guys are going to need more time. They drafted three. They all need more time. There are some players in the lower levels of the minors who have some upper minor league experience, guys like Jim Jarvis, Patrick Klohisse, who could maybe get innings, but neither of them project as everyday big leaguers. If these are guys you're plugging into your lineup day in and day out, I don't think it's a great situation for the amount of runs you're going to be scoring on a daily basis. So they've got some people with upper minors experience that I view as more like reserve or backup types. But really, we have not seen them develop or even select for a shortstop prospect who kind of take over that hole for the team. That's really the biggest hole I see on the team right now. And they've had to kind of use external options to fill that. So that's the one area that you maybe wish they had. And I don't see any obvious names for that for next year.
Along those lines, to kind of just follow up a little bit on that, like you said, they drafted three shortstops with their first three picks. I would say that Cody, you could actually say that Cody Miller, who was the third that they took, you don't want him go overboard on pro debuts in their draft year. He had a very solid pro debut.
He did. Yeah,
we would not be able to say the same thing. I would say that with with Lodice and Soufsine, like neither of them, you would say, like in Soufsine's case, the 27-1 strikeout to walk rate really does jump out. And Lodice to some extent also 42-5 mm-hmm. for two, you know, for a guy who was considered a pretty polished bat, like with had a coming off of an excellent college season,
right?
Maybe a little tired or whatever, but how concerning was that as you're doing the reporting on it? Were those pro debuts for the shortstops they took at top?
Yeah, I'll just say really quickly at the start of this one, kudos to the Braves for the job they did on Cody Miller. Cody Miller is one of the two players that we didn't have ranked in our BA 500 who they took in the first three rounds of the draft, and his contact skills and his pro debut are really impressive. Again, I think the Braves have done a nice job selecting for hitters that are a little underrated on draft day that actually pan out. We'll see if he's maybe the next in a line of those prospects because he does have exciting contact traits to build on. But with both Lodice and with Tate Southesine, I think with Lodice, he's an interesting one because he has physicality, power. I think maybe he's not underrated as a shortstop defender now because I constantly try and say that he's really good and he is underrated. And hopefully that has kind of gone around enough for people to actually give him some credit for how impactful and dynamic he is as a defensive shortstop. But even as he was putting together a player of the year type of season in college, he was one of the most productive college hitters in baseball last spring. It was very clear where his weaknesses and holes were as a hitter. He is an aggressive hitter. He likes to expand the zone. He likes to swing the bat. Maybe he doesn't like to expand the zone, but because he swings so often, he happens to expand the zone quite a bit. That worked for him in college. That's going to be something he needs to refine and improve in order to tap into the power that he does have in pro ball. So that's the area of concern for Lodice he needs to address. With Southesine, Tate Southesine, it was almost surprising to see the degree to which he struggled. I don't think that the current minor league setup for young high school hitters is conducive to success because it's really not a great level to put them right off the bat in official games where they can go out and succeed. But even with that caveat, he had one of the worst debuts of any player from this draft in terms of just looking overmatched at the plate. I mean, he was not swinging at pitches he needed to be swinging to. He was not hitting the ball in the air in any capacity. He was missing with great frequency. The one positive you can say for Tate Southesine from his debut is he is quite strong for a high school hitter. He hits the ball hard when he does connect, but he quite simply just looked like a player who was overmatched at the plate. You would expect, given the system, for a guy like Tate Southesine, where he was ranked in our draft and where he was selected in the draft, to immediately jump into their top 10, those struggles are the reason he's not currently in our top 10. He is a good athlete. He's got a chance to play multiple defensive positions, shortstop, second base, center field, and I think he could wind up being pretty good at all three of those. But right now, he has massive offensive questions he's going to have to answer this year.
As you kind of mentioned, we are still looking at a system where of the top nine prospects, eight are pitchers. It is still a very, very, very pitcher heavy system. Looking ahead to next year, Cam Caminiti's number one. Cam Caminiti's headed to high A. Cam Caminiti should be in consideration, strong consideration to be number one on this list next year. I would say he's the guess to be number one, but I would ask you this. We've talked a little bit about J.R. Richie, who's not, I can't really figure out the scenario where Richie would leapfrog him, because if Richie's that good, mm-hmm. he should kind of hopefully graduate this year. Yeah. Is there someone else here? Is Vidia Fuentes or a Briggs McKenzie or maybe Diego Torna? Is there someone further down on this list who could leap into contention for that number one spot a year from now?
Yeah, the two guys who I'm most excited about who maybe could be, and neither of these guys are going to graduate. I'd be stunned if they graduated because neither have appeared in official stateside pro games. But Briggs McKenzie, number five, who is also a recent addition to the Braves farm system from the 2025 draft. He actually got the most money of their draft class this past year, although he's taken a little bit later. That's common for a lot of high school pitchers to get overpaid in lower rounds. But Briggs is, I think, a similar talent to a lot of the high school pitchers the Braves have taken in recent years, guys like J.R. Richie, Owen Murphy. I mean, he wasn't quite to the level that we had Cam Caminiti, but he also wasn't that far off from that range. And really, with the first month or two of Briggs' season during the spring, he was tracking towards a sort of Caminiti slam dunk first round sort of range. He was showing more velocity. The changeup was improved. But then kind of as the season progressed, the velocity came down a bit. But there's still a lot of unknowns with Briggs because we haven't seen him in pro ball, but the way that you hear him discussed from Braves officials who like him and got a chance to see him, They love the way this guy goes out and competes. The changeup that he flashed is ridiculous. And it's weird to me to talk about McKenzie's changeup so frequently when I bring him up, because his breaking ball is like a 3000 RPM banger of a breaking ball that was one of the better breaking balls in the class. Like, I have no doubt that whatever that breaking ball becomes, if it's more of a sweeper, if it's more of like a gyro, he's going to have a good breaking ball. I'd be stunned if he didn't. So watching the sort of velocity growth for Briggs McKenzie and just seeing, okay, what is the pitchability going to look like? I have pretty optimistic thoughts on like what he can be as a pure pitcher, just having seen him in high school, but you never really know until they get out into pro ball. So getting more confidence on that. And then I think on the hitting side, Diego Tornez, who was a very prominent international signing from them a year ago, I think he is the biggest upside hitter in this system. And granted, that is a low bar for this Braves system that we said is very pitcher heavy, but Diego Tornez could have above average tools across the board. I mean, his pro debut was exceptional. And if you're going to pull up his stat line and say, well, Carlos, he didn't hit a single home run in 32 games, the slug was low, like, we have a lot more information that's telling us that the inputs here, how hard he's hitting the ball, is more impressive than his surface level numbers mm-hmm. show. Pretty universally, the feedback we've got on Diego Tornez his entire game, both the approach at the plate, the impact he was hitting the ball with defensively. I think maybe this is surprising to some people who were following him prior to him actually going to the DSL and playing, but he looked quite good as a defender. He was running well. There's a risk that he moves to a corner, but for now, he looks like he absolutely should stick in center field and stay there. He's got a plus arm. We currently have above average grades on him across the board outside of the hit tool, and we have a 50 on the hit tool, which is pretty loud for a player coming off an age 16 season who hasn't appeared stateside. So while for both these players, a long ways to go, a lot of uncertainty still, there's plenty to be excited about for both as well.
I actually got to see McKenzie pitch because he's a North Carolina kid. So I was able to see one of his last starts of the high school season. Mm-hmm. And I'll, you know, kind of what you said, like, I'm very fascinated to see how he develops, because there's a lot to be really impressed by, but at the same time, he was a high school pitcher. So there's more, you know, than if you're talking about college arm, you're kind of like talking about present stuff.
Right.
He has more kind of almost present secondaries. It's like, okay, how's that fastball going to develop over the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, mm-hmm. which is always a fascinating part of this to see. When you look at this organization, I know that the answer to what is this org good at developing is going to be pitching. I'll ask it a little bit this way, because it used to be hitters. I mean, they produced, there's been an intention to this in some ways, right? I don't want to, when we talk about that this is a pitching heavy organization, somewhat that makes sense when you have locked up a first baseman, a catcher, a first baseman, a second baseman, a third baseman, a right fielder, and a center fielder to long-term deals. If you said, hey, we're going to go position player heavy, you're just really acquiring players. You're developing players largely to trade them at that point. Obviously, mm-hmm. they did develop Drake Baldwin. They did develop multiple catchers. You know, Shea Langeliers was traded away. William Contreras was traded away in bringing back a veteran in Sean Murphy. Then they ended up developing Drake Baldwin. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's been zero, but what is it about what the Braves have done on the pitching side that has been such a success?
I think the Braves have been one of the more aggressive teams in targeting pitchers coming off of injury, that they just buy into the talent and they buy into the makeup. I think this is true of two of their biggest success stories, Spencer Strider and Spencer Schwellenbach. Maybe the success story is just drafting Spencers. We'll see if they have any in the future that they grab. But both of those are players who there's a lot of uncertainty, just given, like, when they were selected, there are questions about injuries with both of them. I think with Strider in particular, it's more impressive because Schwellenbach was viewed as a consensus top 100 prospect at the time. That wasn't the case for Spencer Strider. I think the Dodgers are another team that you see having some success with this strategy, like teams that are, maybe it's just an acknowledgement that, okay, all these pitchers we think have a chance to get hurt. They're going to get hurt at some point. So we might as well take the guys who we just believe in the arm talent, help them rehab and get back on the field. And that's worked out for them. So that specific, like, player demographic is interesting. They're also I think sometimes we can overcomplicate, like, our team's good at developing X player or Y player. And a lot of it just comes down to, like, what are the profiles that you're actually acquiring and getting into your system? It's very hard to develop a ton of hitters if you're not selecting for a lot of hitters. And the Braves have been one of the most aggressive teams in the last 5 to 7 years in the draft of selecting pitchers at the top of the draft. That's also kind of overlapped with a window of time where they really did not have much activity in the international market. Now, we're a few years out for them being kind of beyond their penalties in the international market, so you are seeing some of those players trickle in. But I think part of it is, like you said, they have had an enviable, young, controlled position player core. And I think there's been some ability to just go really aggressive on pitching. And I think even if you're not good at developing pitching, you're probably going to get some success stories with that strategy, just purely in terms of volume. At the same time, I think they've done a nice job of having individualized pitching plans for a lot of their arms. They've never felt like a cookie cutter sort of organization to me where they want all their pitchers to chase whatever the pitching meta is. I feel like they've done a really nice job of leaning into the strengths of what their pitchers come to them with and really trying to make the most of the strengths and then alleviate whatever the issues are. For a few years, and I think maybe a lot of teams are doing this now, I felt like the Braves have done a nice job simplifying young pitcher arsenals and letting them really get reps and improve one. And then once you've kind of mastered a fastball, a good breaking ball, then you kind of open things up and you start to develop other pieces. So those are kind of some of the things I felt like the Braves have done a nice job of. Beyond pitching, they also seem to just do well with these multi-sport two-way player types. Michael Harris's, Austin Riley's, Spencer Schwellenbach's, like for whatever reason, I associate them with two-way players. Cam Caminiti was a two-way player in high school, and they just seem to do well with that demographic.
I would say that they really do. Yeah, they taking the guy who Austin Riley was thought to be a pitcher, and then if you thought you liked him as a hitter, it's like, well, but there's no way that he's going to be able to stay at third base. And then he ends up being a good third baseman defensively.
And I like Michael Harris as a pitcher when he was coming out of high school. So
When I saw Michael Harris in low A, I remember thinking, I've never seen anyone with a faster rotational speed on their trunk. Like, but at the same time, I didn't even know if he'd ever hit a ball in play because it was like, I mean, it was just like he pulled everything so fast, you know, with his swing. That's going to wrap up the video portion of this. But if you are listening to the podcast feed, or if you want to go over to the podcast feed, we're going to keep going, talk about some sleepers and a couple of other topics right after this quick break. So we covered the top 10 pretty well, I feel like. But going beyond the top 10, who are some other names to know here looking down the road at, you know, some guys who could pop?
Yeah, the most interesting one to me is Connor Essenberg. Again, there's another two-way prospect that the Braves jumped on. He was a recent draftee from the 2025 class. Really talented pitcher and outfielder. It looks like hitting is going to be the future for him. But Essenberg has tremendous bat speed and raw power. We haven't yet seen him do anything in official games. He just hasn't played in official games yet. So we'll get a better understanding of what the pure hit tool is in 2026. But I think that if you're looking at like power potential players in the system, Essenberg would be towards the top of the list. I mean, in high school this spring, he had a matchup with Jack Bauer, who is the hardest throwing high school left-hander on record that we're aware of, 102 miles per hour. He took 99 miles per hour from Jack Bauer and homered against it to the opposite field. Like, it's very rare for high school hitters to even witness 99 mile per hour velocity, let alone do anything with it when they see it. So that alone, I feel like, is massively impressive. I've also heard kind of crazy stories about a home run that he hit in unofficial games against the Rays. Like, his ability to fire his hips, fire his hands, and drive the ball at his age is really impressive. It's really exciting. It feels like he's got prototype sort of right field tools with a big arm. He was a talented pitcher. He got to the mid-90s, 94 on the mound in high school. So he's definitely going to have a good arm that'll profile in right. So he's maybe the most interesting. And if he goes out and just has a decent year, his tools alone should be able to push him into the top 10.
Anyone else who kind of jumps out? Like, I mean, you mentioned, we talked a little bit about Cody Miller before. He's one who kind of popped early on, you know, kind of is. There's a couple other names that, you know, that jump out that had been kind of talked about in the past. Like, Isaiah Drake has flashed, I think, at times, but at the same time has not put it all together yet. Mm-hmm. Anyone else on that kind of list that you're like, hey, you know, a little bit less likely, but there's still something kind of intriguing here?
Yeah, I think right beside Isaiah Drake in the 20s here, Eric Hartman, who's an outfielder who was drafted out of Canada in the 20th round in 2024. He's one of the better defenders in the system. Just gets really good reviews for his instincts, route running ability. He's an above average runner. He can play all three outfield positions. And he's shown enough flashes offensively that I think if he took a step forward, it wouldn't be shocking. Now, I'm not sure how much power he's going to have. He's been very pull heavy at this point. His 55.2% pull rate was one of the more aggressive pull rates in the system, especially among players that actually have a significant amount of at-bats and playing time. But the contact skills and his swing decisions, I think, could be carrying traits for him as a hitter. So if he's able to continue making strides, this will be his age 20 season. He's not played above low A, so a little bit further away, and I'm not exactly confident in the offensive tools, but there's enough here, and he comes from a background where it wouldn't shock me if he's kind of this just slow burning type where he continues to improve each year. So that's definitely a name I'm intrigued by.
I got to bring up one other name because he led to one of the most fascinating discussions I think we had at Prospect Handbook time in the offseason when we were working on grades. And we talk about tools, grades, and all. And I'm going to lead into it, and then we'll talk about the name of the player. We kind of got to the question of, can a player have 70 grade pitches with 20 grade control? And Giancarlos Lara was the one we were talking about this, because you could really argue on the pure quality of pitch that it's two plus pitches. Maybe it's two double plus. Maybe it's two that are among the better quality of pitches. But at the same time,
yeah,
with some of the worst control that exist in the upper minors as well. And that led to that whole debate about, okay, is it a plus-plus slider if you don't land it very consistently? Is it a plus-plus mm-hmm. fastball if you only see it like thrown in the zone the way you want to see it sporadically? He has some of the best pure stuff in the system and control that just has to improve, I would say, two grades. Because again, I think we're being charitable when we say 20. Like mm-hmm. you could argue that like he could improve it significantly and it still would stay in that 20 to 30 range. You're going to have 30 control to be able to succeed in any way in the majors, even in short snippets.
Yeah.
What are the chances that that control could get to a point where the stuff that's just so extremely impressive could play?
Yeah. And I feel like I tend to be in the camp of, I'm disconnecting the pitches from the control. I don't view it as like our power projection folds in raw power and pure hitting ability. For me, I like to view the pitches almost in a vacuum, because if he goes out and he improves the control two grades and those pitches stay the exact same, the pitches are more effective now, but they're the same pitches he was throwing. He just mm-hmm. knows how to throw them for strikes better. So that's kind of like philosophically where I come from. I see the argument for people who are maybe in the other camp where they're kind of connected and tied together, but I mean, he misses a ton of bats, and it was only a few years ago where he had a breakout season and it looked like the strikes were heading in the right direction. So there is some glimmer of hope that he can throw strikes better than he has, but he also had nearly a 20% walk rate. I think it was 19.9% walk rate this past year, which if you are taking major league walk rates from every major league pitcher and kind of sketching that out on the 20 to 80 scale, that's off the scale of control. So when you say we're being kind putting a 20, that's what JJ is talking about here. Like his current walk rate, if it doesn't improve at all, is below the bottom of the scale, which
it's a 10,
which big leaguers are perfectly capable of watching 101 miles per hour go by them and be called a ball. Like this is a skill that they all have at this stage. They've seen plenty of filthy breaking balls, and believe it or not, they can still pick those pitches up if they're not close to the zone as well.
And the scouting report on him is going to be like, if he came up, it would be like, make him throw you a strike.
Right. It's
automatic take.
Auto taking until two strikes, really. Like, maybe not two strikes, because I don't know if you'd want to face this slider with two strikes because it is a filthy pitch. But yeah, you'd be auto taking for Lara because his control and command is literally like, do you know where the ball is going? The way we write it is, on the right day, Lara can be unhittable, but he's just, he can't attack the zone consistently enough for me to feel confident that he's going to make the most. I feel like there are maybe Lara is one of the more extreme examples of this in the minors, but I feel like there are so many pitchers in the minor leagues who have filthy stuff and just can never figure out the strike throwing component. And that's what prevents them from being big leaguers. The same is true for position players who are elite defenders, but just can never hit enough to actually warrant being on a big league roster. I view Lara in the same way. He's a reliever only now. I mean, the Braves have committed to starting him some in the past. I really hope they just fully put him in a reliever role. He still started 9 games in Gwinnett last year, 5 games in Columbus. Like, for me, you put this guy straight in a bullpen and let him let the fastball and slider eat for an inning and see what you can do.
I just kind of hope that at some point there's something that clicks. It's like, oh, this is the problem. Because sometimes there is. Like, I'm going to blank on the name, but I remember like looking at, there was a Tigers pitcher who's in their 30 now, and watching him on Synergy and realizing, oh, he's really funky. And your draft report when we wrote him up, it's like, he's really funky from this. It's really hard to pick it up. It's like,
yeah.
But I realized he was like, the way that his delivery was, there was the window to throw strikes was like so small.
Yeah.
And then they moved him to the middle of the mound, like basically the middle of the rubber. It's like, okay, his release point now is like that. All of a sudden, instead of trying to hit a little sliver of the plate, he can now hit the whole plate, and all of a sudden his walk rate cut in half. I'm not going to say there's going to be that kind of fix with Lara, but it is something where stuff-wise, he is still fascinating to watch. Speaking of pitching, the Braves have a new head of their pitching development. Kind of take us through that, and do you think that that's going to lead to any changes in their approach? Like you said, Braves have had a lot of success on developing pitchers, and they probably, that I would say that they rank with the Dodgers as most willing to embrace injury risk. And they know they're going to get burned sometimes. They had a draft where, like, if you look at their top 10 rounds, pretty much every pitcher they drafted and a position player all had Tommy John. David McCabe, that draft also had Tommy John. Is that going to change now, do you think? Or is this the same approach, just a new kind of, leader at the top?
I get more of a sense that the things are kind of be pretty similar. Like, I haven't heard anything, oh, we're looking for a real radical change here. It was a little surprising to hear that they were parting ways with Paul Davis, who had been with the team for a while and had helped produce some of these big pitching wins that we talked about, Spencer Strider, Spencer Schwellenbach. So it's mostly an area that I'm kind of curious to see how it unfolds and to see if there are noticeable changes in how pitchers are being developed, or if there is a specific difference in the sort of traits that are being targeted for pitchers in the draft. So it's more a curiosity with me more than anything. But I don't get the sense, and I don't think it would make a lot of sense for the Braves to overhaul entirely what they're doing on the pitching side, just given the whole conversation we've had here today about their system. So it's something that I just view as more notable and of interest, and something I'm definitely going to be keeping tabs on this year.
So that is our look at the Braves system for a Braves Prospect Podcast deep dive. Carlos, it's been, again, will be fascinating year to watch the Braves, especially because last year was very uncharacteristic for where they've been. We'll see if it's the start of a trend or if it's just a blip on their way back to contending in what, let's just say, is still a very, very competitive National League Eastern Division. We know that the Marlins are on the way up, but still a ways away. Probably the Nationals seem like that they're continuing their rebuild and maybe kind of taking a step back to hopefully down the road take a step forward if you're a Nationals fan. But I would say that the Mets are clearly not shying away. We've seen that. And obviously the Phillies still have a lineup and a rotation to fear. It'll be interesting to watch. We hope you enjoyed this Prospect Podcast. Do please like and subscribe. By the way, obviously, if you're listening to this, check out all the content, including a full top 30 and everything else. By the way, new draft rankings that Carlos just helped finish up. Top 200 draft prospects for 2026 are up. All of that over at baseballamerica.com. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.